passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, it is Monday, June the 5th, 2023. John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting for another roller coaster week at Post Wrestling. How are you, Wei?
I'm good. A roller coaster. Why?
You know what? We have ups.
Makes me nervous.
We have downs. We have twists, turns, tears of joy, vomit. It all is present here at Post Wrestling on a weekly basis.
Well, life is a roller coaster anyway. So, all right. Looking forward to it.
Well, you know what I'm looking forward to is this entire month of June. Might only be a 30-day month, but we have plenty packed into this month. You know, Wei, when I get stopped in the street, you know what the number one question is?
What's that?
Number one is, do you know where Wei Ting is? Number two is, man, tell me more about the Post Wrestling Cafe. And I say, you know what? I would love to tell you more about the Post Wrestling Cafe, the IV drip that is the lifeblood here at Post Wrestling.
That's what we really should have called it instead of the cafe.
We were going to go with, IV drip.
IV drip, yeah.
This month, man, we are stacking things big. This is your chance to get in on all of the fun, all of the action that is just too adult for the free consumers out there. This is behind the beautiful cafe wall where this month we are going to be coming at you live multiple times each week, including a double shot every single Wednesday night this month. We will be doing the double shot after Rewinded Dynamite each Wednesday night to coincide with that week's edition of Dark Side of the Ring. So cafe members know that last week we did a review of the Chris and Tammy episode. And this Wednesday, as soon as we're done Rewinded Dynamite, we will flip over to the cafe chatting the Magnum TA episode, which Wei and I will be watching on Crave on Tuesday night.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yes. Then we will be continuing that each Wednesday night at roughly 11 Eastern. So listen to Rewind to Dynamite and then flip on over to the double shot. As always, you will be getting Rewind to SmackDown each and every Friday, sometimes with Rampage, sometimes without. We will tell you every Wednesday night whether one will be included or not. Last week we did Rampage. This week we'll find out if we'll be doing Rampage.
I think it largely depends on the card.
It's up to you guys. Let us know, AEW. Plus, this month, you can look forward to special shows, including the Ask Away Mailbag, always a popular one, two editions of Rewind Away, and it's going to be ROH month on Rewind Away, starting off with Best in the World 2011, which will be dropping next week, and then in a couple weeks' time, Super Card of Honor number 7 from 2013, an event that you and I attended, Wei, featuring Kevin Steen and Jay Briscoe, a very famous match in both men's careers in Ring of Honor. So Ring of Honor month on Rewind Away. Plus, this coming Thursday, it's the return of the Watch Along. Maybe our most successful dumb idea that we have come up with in years, where the two of us sit down with who else? Brandon from New Jersey. And we spin the wheel and we are going to watch something and we put it out to you. We let you guys throw in your two cents of what would you like us to watch. We got some great ideas and Wei has whittled it down and made to me what is in all honesty, the best and only choice that we could make. So Wei, what are we going to watch this Thursday night for all Cafe members to tune in and watch with us.
Well, let me first say thank you to everybody who sent us an email, left a comment, or left a tweet just suggesting something for us to watch along. I mean, a lot of people, following within the confines of, I think, the regulations, we wanted something about roughly an hour. And some people came through with really interesting choices, various wrestling matches. Somebody recommended like a UWF show. Somebody recommended, Wrestling Society X. A lot of people recommended TV shows. And these are like, more so cameo appearances from wrestlers like a Thunder in Paradise or a Boy Meets World. These are all great choices. Even Jericho and the Masked Singer, somebody recommended that. All great choices. We definitely went the TV route, but we ended up going a route completely away from professional wrestling. I mean, I think it is tangentially related simply because we talk about this show all the time. And John and I have absolutely no idea what it is, but we have an expert who is also going to be on the show with us, in Brandon from New Jersey, who is going to join us to teach us all about Vanderpump Rules. Yes, Vanderpump Rules. That will be the subject of our watch along. I've never seen an episode before. I just read a description the other day, and I'm flabbergasted why this thing is the ratings juggernaut that it has been, killing professional wrestling. Okay. If there's really one threat to the industry, it is Vanderpump Rules. So we're going to find out what it's all about, and Brandon's going to teach us all about it. Diehard fan himself.
Yes. Now, when we say we're going to watch Vanderpump Rules, how many episodes are we watching? We're not watching the whole series.
We're watching one episode, and we're watching the episode, okay?
Okay, this episode.
Is season 10, episode 15, Scandoval. Okay, and I want to thank Grunz for the suggestion. We also had somebody else, Brian Crane, also recommended an edition of Vanderpump Rules. But we're going to go with the one that is the ratings high of the entire season. The one, shall I go through a summary, John?
All right. Please. Spoilers.
Vanderpump Rules, season 10, episode 15, okay? Cameras pick back up after Ariana discovers that her boyfriend of 9 years is having an affair with one of her best friends. Schwartz panics when the scandal threatens to upend their business. Sandoval comes clean with another shocking secret. Jeez, wow. Okay.
And this is an hour?
I think so, yes.
Okay. So this will be the first time I have ever seen Vanderpump Rules. I have alerted Brandon. His response was, "Dear God," and I'm looking forward to watching this mainly with Brandon, but also with you, Wei. You and I are going into this as unassuming and unknowledgeable as possible for this series, as we will find out what led to this show getting a 1.81 with women 18 to 49 last Wednesday.
And we're going to rely on Brandon from New Jersey to recap the first 10 seasons of the Vanderpump Rules for us in probably about
the opening credit scene.
2 minutes. Yeah, exactly. So looking forward to that. I'm assuming a lot of you guys either watch the show or don't watch it. Maybe you guys can join us and tag along Thursday. Have we decided a time yet?
Let's go with, I know it's an awkward, can we aim for like 8:15 p.m. Eastern time? I would say 8. 8's going to be tough, but 8:15, I'll be good.
8:15, okay. Sure.
Is that okay? Is that a weird time to start?
No,
give me a little buffer, because 8, it'll just make me rushing.
No problem. Let's do it.
So there you go. $6 a month gets you access to all of these bonus shows. Double Shots, Rewind to SmackDown, The Watch Along, Ask Away, two Rewind Aways.
Also, the return of MCU later this month. With Rich Fan and WH Park, they'll be talking about Secret Invasion on MCU later. It's been a while, so I'm looking forward to having this back. I might even join, on occasion for one of these episodes. And a ton of stuff this month. And don't forget the G1 just around the corner as well.
The G1 is just around the corner, but also launching this month, exclusive for all Post Wrestling Cafe members, will be a new Collision review show. And this is going to be running when, Wei?
This will start the week of Collision, whenever it starts.
Well, it starts on June 17th. So that night, I will be hosting for that night, but I will be introducing the two regular co-hosts of the show who will be revealed that night. So you can tune in on June 17th and we will find out the two hosts that will be doing this show on a weekly basis, because spoiler, it will not be me and Wei. every week as we both of us made a pact that we're going to stay married. That's our goal. And
not to each other.
Not to each other.
Our other partners. Yes.
Individually. And I think by stating Saturday nights would be given up to more wrestling, that would threaten that. So it will not be Wei and I doing the Collision show. But that first night, I will be on the show and we will introduce you to the new co-hosts that will be doing the show each and every week on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So it's a really packed month, and this gives you access to all of these shows. You can support us at any level, of course, all the way up to the espresso level that gives you the chance to be a guest on Rewind Away and pick your own event. So if you have a desire for Boy Meets World or The Bold and the Beautiful, you can choose it all on the espresso level and join us for a segment if you so choose. So postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door, and that gives you access to all the extra shows, and then you can go above and beyond if you so choose. And looking forward to a very fun week with the double shot, with the watch along, and then Rewind to SmackDown. It will be Wei and Kate this Friday night on Rewind to SmackDown, because we do have a UFC card this weekend and a ton going down at the site. Check out the whole schedule at postwrestling.com.
Also, for video patrons, you can sign up at YouTube for YouTube channel members at video.postwrestling.com. Some of you might even choose to listen to Apple Podcast subscriptions. Of course, if you sign up on Patreon, you can input your custom URL directly into Apple Podcasts. But some of you guys just don't really care for that inconvenience. So if you want to subscribe directly on Apple Podcasts, you can do so as well. $8 a month on YouTube and $8 a month on Apple Podcasts as well.
New Japan Dominion. Wei, did you see a lot, all, or none of Dominion on Sunday?
I saw the opening match and then the last three matches.
Yeah, it was a really great show. They had a very strong audience. It was outside of the Tokyo Dome, their biggest crowd of the year. 7,040, they announced, at Osaka Joe Hall, which was up 16% from what they drew last year. And the last three matches all delivered in different and big ways. Sonata retained the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship by defeating Yota Tsuji after 17 minutes and hit the deadfall. But to me, Wei, the story of this match was Yota Tsuji, who came across as a superstar to this audience in Osaka, and they were ready to see the crowning of Yota Tsuji, which did not happen on this night, but it tells me that Yota Tsuji is seen as a very big deal to this crowd. And it does tell you something about this idea that it takes all this time to make stars, as opposed to boom, we're just going with someone new and he feels fresh. And this audience was ready to take him. And had he won, that place would have exploded. So we'll get to the G1 announcements, but Yota Tsuji being one of the participants, he's one of many. I'm very interested to see how he is booked in that tournament.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, this sort of thing isn't that unusual for Gato's booking. You know, you saw it with Jay White to an extent. Maybe you would even consider Okada, you know, as somebody who's like a brand new debut comes in and just like it shot right to the top. And more than not, it's worked out. You know, like it immediately, this guy feels like a perfect fit for the main event scene. Went in there and had what, a 20 minute match with Sonata, delivered.
This was only 17. And I've liked that the Sonata matches, they're not doing your 35 minute IWGP title match. It was almost like you weren't even ready for the finish when it happened. But it's, you know, number one, it's kind of changing up the pace. And it's also making the deadfall can come at any point, and it is lights out. They're doing a very similar thing with David Finlay, giving him very strong, dominant wins. But this was more of a match that, you know, it was more 50-50 with Tsuji.
But he more than kind of like lived up to the role, and in turn has really made me excited about him in this New Japan main event mix. And you add that to a David Finlay, to a Sonata, as, you know, stars that they've made in recent months. I mean, you know, some further along than others, but the end goal is by the end of this year that you have a fresh new roster of a new generation of top guys ready to go.
Okada, Tanahashi, and Tomohiro Ishii retained the NEVER six-man tag titles over Jon Moxley, Shota Umino, and arriving with minutes to spare, Claudio Castagnoli, who dealt with travel issues, and they were constantly giving updates throughout the broadcast. And I guess he arrived about 25 minutes before they got into the ring. So he goes out there. Crazy. I mean, you would never have known the difference if you weren't aware. He looked great in this match. It was an awesome six-man. And man, Okada is, to me, just, he is refreshing himself in such a unique way, as not even that unique. Like, he's just the asshole bully veteran that with this whole youth movement, they all can go through Okada. And he's the guy that I've been here, I've done that, and you do not impress me. And Shota Umino is his target at the moment. And the announcers were great, even explaining when he applied the money clip, Umino isn't even good enough to fall to the Rainmaker. He's going to get beat by the money clip. So it made it even more like a moral victory that Umino did push him to need to resort to the Rainmaker when he won this one. But I loved Okada in this match. My one negative, man, this headbutt that Ishii delivered to John Moxley, he just powered up and just rammed him in the forehead and busted Moxley open a hard way. And it was my issue is, like, yes, we always go over these headbutt spots. Number two is that you so easily could have missed this spot. And it was like Moxley starts bleeding. And I imagine there were people watching this that might not have even have noticed the headbutt. It's not as though it's even this really impactful moment, and that wouldn't justify it either. But it's just, it is so unnecessary to me when, you know, we are in this era where there's such a care by the audience for the performers that did not exist, I feel, to this degree in generations prior. And yet with this kind of stuff, it's as though, well, it's just, it's not an immediate penalty that a performer is necessarily going to sustain. But like, these headbutts are, not to say every instance you're going to have a Shibata, but it's like, we lived through a Shibata, and it just scares me that there will come the time that we're going to hit that again. And it's as though we just, like, I really thought these headbutts would be done. And I just watched this, and it's consistent. It just always takes me out of the match momentarily. And I just feel there's going to be one of those times that this is going to be just, it's the heat of the moment, the adrenaline, and it's going to be a really nasty shot. And it's just, it's so unnecessary. The audience is not clamoring for it. And there's just so many better options than the skull-to-skull headbutt that is, it is still a tool for some of these performers.
I've never taken one. I don't plan to. I would hope that, you know, somebody as well-respected and as great of a wrestler as Tomohiro Ishii is, if he were to deliver one of these to somebody, that it would be done with the care of the other person in mind. It did break Moxley open here. Hopefully that's a superficial wound. But yeah, I totally agree that they're completely unnecessary. And I feel like in North America, at least as far as like WWE and AEW goes, you never ever see them. But in Japan, like we saw them here. I saw them on the Stardom show not too long ago. I don't know. Maybe it's just sort of like a different culture. Maybe they know a secret to working these things that, you know, others don't. But I agree that we certainly don't need them. They don't affect my viewing really one way or another.
Well, the big angle afterwards with Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii retaining the titles, John Moxley informs them that they do not think that Okada, Tanahashi, and Ishii are the best wrestlers in the world, because we train with the best in the world, and he has sent a message, and we go to the mountains. This looks like a Ransom video here with this still shot, and it's Bryan Danielson in the mountains, and he announces that he has heard all of the hype about Kazuchika Okada. This man calls himself the Rainmaker. Well, when you're in the fucking desert with me, there is no rain. And Bryan Danielson wants Okada at Forbidden Door. And this is one of two matches coming out of this show that we have set up for Forbidden Door. But this was probably not many people's option. It was Jim Ross swerved everyone on Rampage to lead you into the direction of Zack Sabre Jr. And here we get Danielson and Okada.
Jim Ross, and I think it really everybody, you know, that I don't know if that necessarily was my expectation, but it also probably was my leading candidate. I mean, that was the match that they were going to do last year. I mean, Zach, to my knowledge, like, has still continued to tease it off and on. But this is a bigger match. It really is, you know. It'll
probably also get more than 15 minutes.
Oh, you'd hope. You'd hope. I don't know if it's a sure bet. Do you think it main event?
Well, we don't know the whole card yet. I would say no. I think at this point, I don't know if anything is going to be bigger than Omega and Ospreay on that show.
Agreed. I as big as this match is, as much of a dream match, like a legitimate dream match, it really is. You know the quality that Ospreay and Omega are going to deliver, and that's going to be tough to top for anybody.
So that was one of the big stories coming out of the show. As well, we had Hiromu Takahashi retaining the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title against Master Wato, which was excellent, excellent match. And yeah. Man, when Master Wato hit his big bridging German, which is how he won all of his round robin matches in the tournament, when he used this on Hiromu, this audience thought that was it, that it was the end. And Hiromu kicking out was a huge moment in the match. I watched this and I really felt like this could have been Master Wato's big win. And if you're going to look at a silver lining here, is we had a show where this audience was so hot to see Yota Tsuji win, to see Master Wato win. And who could have forecasted this 6 months out, that these two would have been, you know, the audience would have just exploded if either of these men had won their respective titles. But regardless of the loss, Master Wato has graduated to a significant level. He's coming off the biggest match of his career in the finals with Teton and an excellent tournament. So just change that name and he's off to the races.
It's the haircut for me.
Well,
just grow that hair long, change up the ring gear a little bit, you know, change the name, really. But like the base level package is incredibly, like, is there in ring. He's phenomenal. And I think his moveset is really spectacular. So, you know, but hey, clearly, like, maybe you and I are in a minority because this audience didn't seem to care about the way he looked.
Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi won the IWGP and Strong tag titles, beating Evil and Yujiro and it was Aaron Hanare and Great O'Khan as the third team in this. You know, you had all the House of Torture stuff in this, but I would say overall, this to me, this still overcame the House of Torture garbage in the match. And I loved how Kevin Kelly, like, his thing, it can certainly just be taken as he just buries House of Torture, but it works in the story as well, that it's like these guys are a disgrace to New Japan, and stating that they need to win these tag titles because there's no way Tony Khan would book them for Forbidden Door unless he was forced to by them holding the tag team championship. So it was like, that was their driving force to win these belts. It would force Tony Khan to book them for Toronto by winning.
Creative.
Yes. Like, and by losing, we can assume that Evil and Yujiro will not be on the card in Toronto.
I don't think you can assume anything.
Catch 22 defeated Kushida and Kevin Knight. So TJP and Francisco Akira regaining the junior heavyweight tag titles. And the opener was Will Ospreay beating Lance Archer. They only went 8 minutes, but it was a really intense 8 minutes. And afterwards, Lance Archer noting that he's been out dealing with a torn triceps injury. And Ospreay gets the win after a final hidden blade and then challenges Kenny Omega for Forbidden Door and then declares war on Canada.
Should I be scared?
I think he's coming for all Canadians. And you know how everyone raved about his go-home promo before the Kenny Omega match at the press conference? I think his go-home promo before Forbidden Door, it should air on Collision the night before on King Street, on top of Bret Hart's Walk of Fame star.
Ooh, I love it. Great. Is that the destination hangout of, is that the only wrestling monument we have in the city?
Yes, he can go cut his promo and then he can jump into Gabby's for a drink and then make his way back to the Scotiabank Arena.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's waging war and you know what? I welcome it. When kind of like, you know, we were talking about where this match should take place, if it was a decision between Wembley and Toronto, I was willing to say Wembley because I think it's a bigger stage. Doing it at Forbidden Door in Toronto suggests to me that there's a possibility they might do it again at Wembley. But I'm very happy that's taking place in Toronto and that we'll be able to watch it live. I mean, the first match might still be a leading candidate for match of the year for me right now. And
I think it is for most people.
Chapter 2 is going to have some very, very high expectations attached to it.
I can't remember a match. Maybe you have to go back to Omega and Okada in terms of a second match having this level. I would say this one, it might even be a higher standard that people have. As great as that first Okada Omega match is, and they did surpass the first one by the end of that series, they did surpass it. But this one will be certainly You know, they're coming in with gigantic expectations, but there you have it. So those are the two matches we have so far for Forbidden Door.
Let me just say, I hope these four men wrap themselves in bubble wrap for the next month or next few weeks at least, so that they can at least make it. Because, I mean, I cannot take the heartbreak that might come from an injury to any of these guys. Travel plans screwing up, like, that would just kill me at this point. So I hope everybody stays healthy.
And the last thing of note on the show, well, we'll get to the G1, but they several new Bullet Club members, and Gabriel Kidd and Alex Coughlin joined along with Dan Maloney into the group. Dan Maloney turning on his United Empire teammates, and he's forming a team with Clark Connors. So this new Bullet Club, you've got Connors, Maloney, Coughlin, Gabriel Kidd, and led by David Finley. And I kind of like this makeup. It's no sort of Bullet Club lineage from the past. It feels like all fresh guys that are in the midst of their first significant pushes in the company. And I've got to say, like, the Bullet Club has been a pretty stale act for some time, but this is at least as fresh as you can make the Bullet Club at this point. And you're going to have Connors and Maloney challenging TJP and Akira July 4th for the junior heavyweight tag titles.
So it just seems like they've taken over the LA dojo.
In a way, dojo. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's good that they at least have some sort of direction, kind of puts them on the map, especially like in Japan, you would hope a little bit more. I don't know how much like being in the Bullet Club like really means anymore, John, to be honest with you. Like, you know, there was a time where like simply being inducted and getting your own shirt sort of like was enough of a boost for you. Now it just feels
which
like,
I thought was like such a huge part of it until I interviewed AJ Styles during the peak of that period and asked him, like, you know, it must be really nice, like the t-shirt cut that you guys get. And he informed me, oh, we don't get any cut from New Japan of those t-shirt sales. So I was like, oh.
To be honest, though, how would you even divide that up at this point?
Well, I would think like the lead guy would at least be cut into something of it. I mean,
but what's the lead guy? Like, let's say, like, you know, and they sold a bunch of BC shirts right now. I mean, who's the lead guy? You tell me. I know it's David Finley, but like, you know, do you cut in like, you know, all the BC gold members? You cut in like every single.
Well,
member?
You know what? If I was in a group of six and we were meeting with New Japan, you know how the negotiating would start? Not zero. That would be my position, okay? Not zero. Yeah. That's where we'd like to start. So if you told me that we were going to get 25 cents a shirt, listen, we would be more than happy. At
this
point,
it's probably more like, you know, point.
Yeah, 0.25 cents. I might be getting way ahead of myself, but yeah. There you have it. The G1. So 32 men announced for tournament. This will run July 15th through August the 13th, and a lot of turnover with 10 first-time participants, and multiple names that are not coming back from last year. So here is the full list in the G1. We have Okada, Naito, Sonata, Will Ospreay, Hiroshi Tanahashi, David Finlay, Shota Umino, Shingo Takagi, Tomohiro Ishii, Tama Tonga, Tanga Loa, Hiku Leo, Hirooki Goto, Yoshihashi, Toru Yano, Kenta, Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, Eddie Kingston, the lone AEW representative, El Fantasmo, Ren Narita, Evil, Chase Owens, Jeff Cobb, Great O'Conn, Aaron Hanare, Gabriel Kidd, Alex Coughlin, Shane Haste, Mikey Nichols, Yota Tsuji, and representing Pro Wrestling Noah, Kaito Kiyomiya. And obviously, as the outsiders, the biggest reactions were reserved for Eddie Kingston and Kaito Kiyomiya. I would say from the AEW perspective, I think New Japan should be happy they're getting Eddie Kingston, because with the launch of Collision, I certainly looked like it would be a small, small number of AEW representation to be available for a month when you have 4 hours of big cable television to produce every week. So the fact that they're getting Kingston is great. And I think that, you know, it seemed like online that seemed to be the most excitement. But I think it's great that Kiyomiya is in this tournament, and it would seem like a natural that he's in Okada's block, or at least that is teased. And whether he goes the time limit with I don't think he should beat Okada yet, but it should be a progression from the wipeout that he had earlier this year. And to me, that's one of the most compelling stories in this whole G1.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, for me, like the G1 at this point, like fully out of the pandemic, like knowing what the best of the Super Juniors lineup was, I had at least some expectation for, you know, people coming in from other promotions. And you only really have two outsiders, but they're two big outsiders that are coming in, like enough to elicit big reactions just even independently. And when you couple the two of them together, it was enough to make me look at this G1 lineup as like something to be excited about. And I think for Eddie Kingston, it must be a bit of a dream come true. You have to think, you know, for somebody who's as big of a Japanese wrestling fan as he is, to finally get to participate in a G1. It's interesting that maybe Tony kind of considers him, I don't want to say expendable, because, like, you know, this is, I think, really good for Kingston. He probably wanted to do it himself, but he's not a Danielson, and I guess he's not a Moxley that you could, you know, maybe not, like, you don't need him necessarily for every week on TV. So, but man, in the G1, it's very exciting, and like you said, Kiyomiya gets to continue his next chapter in this Okada program while continuing to really kind of fly the flag of Noah and hopefully impressing a lot of people in the process.
So among those who are in their first G1, it includes Umino, Hikuleo, Eddie Kingston, Ren Narita, Gabriel Kidd, Alex Coughlin, Shane Haste, Mikey Nichols, Yota Tsuji, and Kiyomiya. Those not coming back from last year. Most of these are a result of guys signing elsewhere. In the case of Jonah, a.k.a. Bronson Reed, Jay White and Juice Robinson. Bad Luck Fale is not in the tournament, and watching him last year, I cannot say I'm stunned by that one. He had a rough go of things last year in the G1, and I just don't know how he would have necessarily held up a year older, and I don't think that was a bad call. But man, I got messages from more than one person who reminded me, hey, did you notice no Yujiro? And I said, yes, I absolutely noticed no Yujiro. The ones that maybe are surprising, Lance Archer not coming back, and maybe that would suggest that now he is healed and perhaps he is going to be prioritized in AEW coming back. I would say my biggest surprise was not seeing Tom Lawler come back. And I thought he had a very good tournament last year. And that was from a, like, we saw all sides of Tom Lawler in that tournament. Like, he did the comedy stuff. He did the very serious stuff when they built up to the Okada match. He gave that really heartfelt promo. We got to hear him on commentary as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he hasn't been used in Japan a lot over this last year. I don't think he's been brought back by New Japan for any Japanese shows. He's been on the strong cards. He had that great match with Zach a few weeks ago in April in I think it was the Washington show. But yeah, he would have been the only one that I was surprised did not get called back, but maybe not as surprised just given that they haven't brought him back for any big shows. But I thought he had a very good outing last year.
Yeah, maybe I would have expected him to sort of like be the representative from, you know, the New Japan strong side of things here. But I mean, I guess they only have so many spots and they have a lot of people.
And they're on a youth kick. Like, they are on, yep. Like, we have invested in all of these younger talents to go across the world and to be away for all these years. And now they're all coming back and we're giving them all pushes to varying degrees, like in big. And it'll be interesting to see, like, who are, like, none of these guys are going to be all like, you know, 0-9, 0-10 guys. Like, these are going to be, some of them are going to get some significant runs in this tournament. And yeah, it does feel like there is a young guard. And I like the fact that you change it up and, you know, to get 10 new names in the tournament. It'll be, I'm very excited for this tournament.
Yeah. Freshness, I think, is, you know, really one of the main aims of, you know, New Japan this year. And they've certainly achieved that with a lot of their booking decisions.
WWE and Twitch made an announcement today. WWE announced a multi-year partnership with Twitch that will see the return of the official WWE channel and popular WWE superstar channels featuring live and exclusive content. Now, maybe the most interesting part of this announcement is that in addition to the launch of the channel, WWE will debut today a companion sidecast. Okay, that's the term they're using, sidecast, which I had to write today and Microsoft Word is just underlining it in red for me. Like, this is not a word. But nonetheless, a sidecast to Monday Night Raw, bringing the WWE universe behind the scenes and closer to the in-ring action. The weekly viewing experience will be led by a rotating cast of hosts and will regularly feature appearances by WWE superstars, unique and exclusive content such as backstage interviews and more. And additionally, the official channel of WWE will be home to other live productions and will serve as an alternate live streaming feed for all of WWE's premium live event press conferences. So a few notes to this. Number one is this sidecast that Nick Khan had recently mentioned, and everybody seems to be looking for their version of the Manning cast. And that is sort of what I read this to be. Now, both of us had a chance to sample and watch a bit of this sidecast on Monday night. And watching this sidecast, it felt as though the people in charge of this were made aware of this morning when this press release went out. It was a very, by WWE standards, and maybe by any standards, a very bare bones production of that. It did not have much viewership, and it was Megan Morant, Drew Gulak, and Ryan Papola from The Bump watching about an hour and 40 minutes of Raw together. Then Megan had to leave to go get ready for Raw Talk. And then for like the last hour or so, it just flips over to Drew Gulak's personal channel, and he's just alone for the last hour of Raw. And viewership, I saw it like peak around, and I know how the viewership works, and you know, maybe this is not all the total viewership, but the live viewership was the highest I saw was around 1,100, 1,200 people, and got precipitously lower, to the point that by the final hour when it was just Drew Gulak, like we're talking under 200 people watching this.
Where did the other guy go? Like for the last hour?
Maybe at his fill of Raw. I don't know. I wasn't watching this like intently the whole night, so I don't know what his
sign. Poor Drew Gulak, you know, like, you know, the only one on the island.
Well, we should remember that this follows a report back in April from Fightful that WWE and Twitch had reached an agreement that, you know, talent would be figured into like revenue opportunities here. So whatever this deal is going to mean, it should mean revenue for the talent on top of it. Mm-hmm. But also interesting to note, there was zero promotion of this on WWE, whether that was just wanting to soft launch this or it could be a deal where this is maybe USA Network does not want them promoting another broadcast where, mm-hmm. unlike the Manning cast, which is on ESPN2, this NBC Universal has no connection to Twitch. Twitch is owned by Amazon, which is also interesting. Yep. But I would not say this launched tonight and felt like any kind of a game changer for WWE. It was three people on a screen like this watching Raw, and they could not show any footage of Raw. They didn't have any guests on beyond the three of them. It was just a very basic broadcast. It's like a panel show. So it's, you know, in the WWE type of conversation.
So what do you mean? Like, were they talking about the wrestling as if it was real? Like, was it in kayfabe or not?
It was like watching The Bump, like that. Like, they're not going to be talking about, you know, inside
like, was
stuff.
Was Gulak breaking down technique? Like, was Gulak?
I didn't get enough of a sense. I would say within the first 10 minutes, Drew Gulak started eating, and I felt like that was my cue to turn the sound off.
Well, I mean, I will say, I guess a lot of these sort of like, you know, streams are relatively casual. That could be like an aesthetic decision to go completely minimal. But more than likely, knowing the WWE sort of sense, this looked to me like a very rushed production and one without a whole lot of thought put into it. And I don't necessarily blame the host for that. I mean, I wonder.
No, I mean, they did as good a job as you could. But I think for this to have any kind of traction, you want big stars attached to it. Like, part of the Manning cast is you've got the Manning brothers and you've got all these celebrities, and it's considered something that, man, if I'm not going to watch Monday Night Football live, this is such a cool, different alternative experience.
So who are the Manning brothers equivalent in pro wrestling? What's the star level that you think would be an attractive enough like hook for a watch along?
I really don't know. I don't know who.
What's the Undertaker doing? Okay, I want the Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve. You know, it should be Undertaker and Kane. Okay, they're the brothers.
Okay, all right. It's definitely Bret Hart watching every Monday night.
I would only watch that, and I would not watch the commentary.
Well, that's like that's kind of the appeal you want of something that
should be Bret and Sean watching.
My God, I want to see this, but. The other side of it, and maybe like we shouldn't look at this week one of where this is. I'm I'm sure this is going to grow and become more of a priority for them. But I would say from this, if the NBC Universal side is looking at this as something like, okay, this is a side deal, but there's no mentions on Raw of this. Mm-hmm. I do see that as somewhat short-sighted because number one, it's like Twitch does reach a much younger audience. And WWE, when they can put their muscle into something, they will find success at this, I am sure. And the hope would be if you are reaching people that are not watching Raw, that could have a long-term assist for Raw. Like we have seen, like WWE, for all you want to say, like their engagement on social media is insane. And now mm-hmm. we're starting to see the benefits when you have strong storytelling and a hotter product, the audience is getting younger. And yeah. this could be a gateway to that. I would not say tonight was at all a step in that direction. It's what it could represent. But it was interesting that here's a press release that they put out. It got covered and there was not a mention of this on Raw. So that would, that's very unlike WWE to not just tout their own successes and business developments.
Yeah. Some interesting questions. I think a path to their growth might not necessarily be through a simulcast like this, but maybe on the off hours where they're not doing professional wrestling, like on a Tuesday afternoon at 12 o'clock, like it's going to be difficult for a company like a WWE though, because I my opinion of like, you know, what is successful on Twitch is a lot of personality that is like singularly driven, you know, and that feels authentic. And you're
with the New Day, like work in something like this,
because yeah, actually,
that's like a realistic, grouping that you could have doing something like this, or you could have like a rotation.
Oops, sorry. Yeah. Dougie here in the chat room suggests New Day would be great. Scott says Biggie and Breeze feels like an easy win. I mean, we've seen sort of iterations of this with them on commentary, right? Like anytime you have the New Day on commentary, it's wildly attractive, and that a version of something like that. Yeah. With a Biggie, I would at least, I think, be a bit of a draw, you know? So, But yeah, I a lot of questions, and maybe today was just sort of like a trial.
Mm-hmm. This was, it does remind me of when this was years ago in 2005, when WWE tried this concept called WWE Unlimited. And for those that don't remember, at the time they were putting so much focus on the website. And this idea was when Raw goes to commercial, we're going to keep broadcasting. So they would actively send you from USA to WWE.com. Like, don't watch the commercials, go to the website to watch as the show continues during commercial breaks. And it was only after a few weeks that USA was like, you are not driving our viewers away from our commercial inventory. And that did not last too much longer. But I would argue it'd be, to me, semi short-sighted. And I think if you looked at the numbers tonight, I don't think this is really going to threaten Raw's viewership with this alternate sidecast. But you know, your hope would be to beef this up so that this, like, the goal to me of this way would be just creating another program that you can sell, and tonight was not a show that you can sell in any significant way.
Right.
Moving on to better WWE news. Friday Night SmackDown did a phenomenal number, 2,563,000 viewers and a 0.73 in the demo. So this was their highest audience since the December 30th episode last year when John Cena teamed with Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn. And it was their highest demo audience since December 25th of 2020, which was that night that had on Christmas that had the huge NFL lead-in. Prior to that, you'd have to go back to March 20th of 2020 for an episode of SmackDown with Rob Gronkowski on the episode, or very, very early in the pandemic. So this was a gigantic number. Brandon Thurston had the quarter hours, and the final 15 minutes of the show with Roman Reigns and the celebration taking up the last half hour, it peaked with 2.9 million viewers, 1.13 million in the demo, and they were just up insane. They were up 86% from last week in 18 to 34. Women in the demo were up nearly 60%. Women 18 to 34 were up 86%. The 18 to 34 demo was up 61%. So, I mean, we can go over all these different numbers, but this was a massive, massive hit on Friday, with the last half hour carrying things. Like, the Roman Reigns celebration was gigantic. And my question to you, Wade, number one, your reaction. And number two is the Jey Uso decision. Does that have the same type of appeal for this Friday?
I don't think so. At least I don't see it matching
comparable. I don't think we could expect this as the barometer, okay. But in line of just still like a healthy number that they are building this around a decision, a big storyline plot point.
It doesn't feel as big to me, John, because I think Roman Reigns is a far bigger name. You know, you have like a nice, well-rounded number in 1,000 that, you know, has kind of been built up to for a long, long time. You're also coming off of a PLE, so there's added interest there. I think all those factors and just, you know, the general sort of like star power of a Roman Reigns probably exceeds like this decision with Jey Uso, and who knows if it'll be even anything concrete. Whereas the promise of a 1,000 celebration, you're almost kind of guaranteed a big event.
They're also up against game 4 this Friday with the Nuggets and the Miami Heat. So that's something to keep in mind as well for this coming Friday. So, I mean, giant number way, biggest viewership of the year, biggest demo in years. What do you think happened in Canada?
Nothing.
Viewership was down 14% from last week, 129,500 viewers. Although the demo was up, it did 62,400, which is up 28% from the week prior. And this is not even, again, we had no NBA, we had no NHL on Friday, but they did go against the Blue Jays and the Mets, which was the top sports program that night, and the CFL preseason on top of it. So SmackDown was sixth in sports, but this was a normal number for SmackDown and nowhere near the level they were doing earlier this year when Zayn was on fire. So did not resonate. And I found that really interesting that this was an unmitigated success in the US and it was just a normal number in Canada.
Maybe because the weather's so much nicer, like Canadians can finally go out and do something. And we're not staying at home and watching TV like we were all winter long because it's freezing up here.
Well, yes, we were at home watching SmackDown and then an hour of Rampage. And for all the attention and interest in Championship Friday, it did not spike viewership on Friday. They did 357,000 viewers, so actually dropping 18% from the week before. The demo was up slightly by 3%. So it did finish 12th on cable, third in its time slot behind the College Softball World Series, which I missed. Don't ruin it for me. And On Patrol Live. But they were down 6% with males 18 to 49 that you would think this kind of a show would be most appealing to.
Yeah, the nerds.
Well, at 18 to 34, they were down 20% in that demo, although men did grow in that demo. Women had a big decline from last week. But, you know, it was Rampage's best demo audience since April 22nd. That was a Saturday show. But anyway, this was not something where it exploded the audience. And I didn't know what this show would do. Like, we saw Vikingo mean a whole lot the first time that he had the match with Kenny Omega. This was not Kenny Omega.
Was also not sort of like, you know, the whole like online controversy that preceded Vikingo's appearance either.
No,
that first time.
No. Maybe we were really hoping for they're promoting Championship Friday and there isn't even one AEW championship being defended. Maybe that was the hope thing. They were hoping for a controversy.
Clearly the key. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does that tell you? Do you think Tony will continue to book Rampages like this, or should this tell him to stay away from this type of booking?
I don't think you can do a lineup like this every single week. But number one, I would say we have seen instances where a big SmackDown, you would think, oh, all these people are watching wrestling, that should help Rampage. It has not been the case as it's played out.
You're serving two very different products, okay? Somebody might be watching this for a Roman Reigns 1000 celebration, but they're not necessarily going to care about a Vikingo or a Katsuyori Shibata.
Yeah, right? If anything, it might teach you that for a big, big SmackDown, it's going to lure away the average Rampage viewer that is not going to then watch a third hour on Friday night. They're going to get their fill from SmackDown and not watch a Rampage. Not to say that Rampage is, hitting it out of the park either, like with their numbers, but it to me, I would not be turned off either by this lineup and 1 week's number. I think you need to build consistency and build the kind of reaction that people had Wednesday that was universally praising this lineup and wanting to see the show. I don't think you can be so reactive to one bad number for a show that has been struggling numbers wise and is coming off 2 months of being knocked all over the schedule, and you're trying to establish some level of consistency. And the last thing is just Showbuzz Daily. They were delayed with putting out their charts, and just a few notes that came out. NXT ranked fourth last week, which is an insanely high ranking for NXT, which is usually in like the teens or the 20s. So it was like a lower night on cable, but for them fourth, and they were not that far off from being ahead of number two and number three. And this was on Tuesday night, which also featured the debut of The Ultimate Fighter. And this is the big season with Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. And granted, this is simulcast on ESPN Plus, so this doesn't represent all the viewers. But TUF did a 0.14 and 294,000 viewers, which to me is an awful number when you have got Conor McGregor coaching TUF, and this is on ESPN. And I just looked at that number. It's like, man, you are doing a fraction of the viewership that NXT is doing and not even beating them in the demo. Like, it tells me that TUF is just not a priority show. And you cannot have a bigger coach than Conor McGregor. And Michael Chandler is still a very well-known star. But anyway, I'm sure you factor in ESPN Plus. It's like it boosts it a little, but you know, the hope was that, like, this got them on ESPN and you're doing 294,000 viewers. I find that to be very disappointing. And then Dynamite was ranked second last Wednesday behind Vanderpump Rules. And yes, Vanderpump, we saw how AEW's female viewership was down so significantly. Well, it was because Vanderpump did a 1.18 among women 18 to 49, which is just insane. This destroyed everything on cable and broadcast on Wednesday night. I think it doubled what was number two. So in women 18 to 49, to put into comparison, Vanderpump was 1.18. AEW did a 0.14 in that same demo. So Vanderpump is just a runaway train of momentum. And they've got their third reunion special this Wednesday that Dynamite is up against.
How do you reunite three times?
Okay. I do not know. But I think, and then they're doing Secrets Revealed next week. So, dude, it's like wringing every drop out of the Vanderpump towel this year and continuing this. So, That is, we will find out more on our watch along on Thursday night, but there you go. That is all of your notes. And Tony Khan will make an announcement on Wednesday night. He will announce the first main event for Collision. So there you go. Do you think I think they get it now, like the announcements. And
I think they got it a long time ago, you know? Okay. I think the bet is to see when these runs of announcements will stop. Like, how far into this announcement hole can Tony Khan go? How much can he milk this? So after you've announced the match, can you announce a stipulation? Can you announce
here's my thing with the announcements is that, you know,
they have to deliver. They have to deliver.
Well, yeah, and I'm saying, like, these last few, like, they've all been major. And I think, like, yes, that should teach people that this match, and it's the main event of the first Collision. Like, I think people have a very big expectation level. Like, this is not going to be, I don't know, like the Young Bucks against the Butcher and the Blade. Like, people, which would be like, it's a fine match, but people are expecting like a blockbuster match announcement for that first Collision. And they should have a blockbuster match for the first main event.
Should they try commercial free for that first episode?
That's an interesting question that they could certainly, I would think like that could be something to try.
At least for the match, I don't see, I mean, AEW is essentially commercial free now, but I think being able to have something extra to promote it, something extra for Tony Khan to announce, would that add that little thing? You know, you're trying to get people to make Saturday a habit, and that's a lot more to ask for than, you know, just a typical night. So.
What's your expectation level of seeing, especially after Tony Khan's answer? It was an interesting answer at the press conference that we didn't discuss about the idea of a Bill Goldberg, who is probably like your biggest free agent that is out there that could have a short-term impact. Could you see Bill Goldberg being figured into getting Collision off the ground and making at least an AEW appearance over these next this next month or two?
I actually can, especially like in the buildup towards something like an All In, and even beyond, you know, especially now that you have something like a Collision.
If he were announced or comes in Chicago, like they could keep him as a surprise. I think that spikes a lot of those Collision tickets.
Yep.
And if he is, if this builds up, like maybe he does one match on TV, but maybe you build up to something big for All In, that will move tickets for Wembley too.
Look at the mileage they've gotten out of Sting. Okay. And this is a guy who's already like, you know, had spinal stenosis, had already retired. Look at the mileage they've had and the rebuilding that they've done with Sting. I think they could do something very similar with Bill Goldberg by attaching him to a young star, putting him, hiding him in these sort of like, you know, multi-man tag matches, coming in, doing all of his spots, which like for the most part still look very good. And then just really building the aura of the character. I'm actually now quite curious to see how he would be portrayed in AEW.
Like, you're not getting a Dave Bautista, and like it's not a very long list of people that have that kind of attraction with people that can still do like his character. And it's not like he has to come in and do some big 20-minute match. It's like you can protect him in such a way. And we certainly saw from this last WWE run, he can be effective when left to his own devices and presented as Bill Goldberg.
Yeah. And a big name on a marquee. That yes. You know, you could use to help elevate a lot of your younger stars, and for pay-per-views that you're selling to still like an audience that might not be as familiar with your AEW roster, yeah, he could mean a lot.
Into Raw we go. That was a lot of news off the top, but a lot of big stuff going on. PWInsider.com reported late Monday that Vince McMahon was apparently backstage at the show in Hartford, Connecticut. So we'll see if there is any fallout of that, or if Vince maybe just wanted to take in the night. Maybe
I mean, makes sense. He does live in the state.
Yeah, you know? It's. I mean, short the location.
If it's your company and they're doing a show like a short drive away, are you not going to show up?
I mean, he's barely shown up for the last year, so I mean, you know, he picks his.
Clearly, the man just wants to stay at home.
The Seth Rollins starts the show. He comes out and he notes that the last time the world title was defended on Raw, it was Big E and Austin Theory in November of 2021. So it's been too long, and he's facing Damian Priest tonight. So Priest and Balor come out. There's no Dominic and Rhea. And man, one thing I did not like about this was it felt like more Rollins does comedy every now and then, but this really felt like forcing it with like the jokes about Balor and Priest and how they hold each other's hands and help each other in the washroom. It's like, you're now the world champion. So this is almost like, this is now part of the job description.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's just part of the character. And I feel like they've really diminished portions of the character, including the fake laugh, for like quite a while now, especially on this babyface ascent. Now that he's maybe taken a bit more of a focal point, you are reminded that whole thing is still a core part of his character. And I just don't think he's that good at it in general. But again, I get the sense maybe we're in a minority, you know, because he's over. He's more over now than he was before he was doing all this stuff.
I don't mind like aspects of the character, but this one felt to me as though they were like force feeding these jokes into him. But the key to the story is that Rollins is able to convince Damian Priest to face him one-on-one and leave the Judgment Day in the back, and Balor's protesting, but Priest sort of steps in and cuts off Balor and agrees to it. And we're starting to hint at dissension between Balor and Priest that would play itself out in the match. And there was a really good line at the end when Priest says that Rollins is going to have one of the shortest reigns ever. And Rollins says, well, not as short as Balor's, which was a nice zing at the end.
Yeah. Clearly building something up with Balor as well. But man,
I think they're going like as soon as next week, unless that's Money in the Bank and they're,
I think there's like trash talk and then there's like really belittling somebody. And I thought all throughout tonight, it really felt like Balor was being positioned as like an underling, like almost lowest on the totem pole in the Judgment Day.
Becky Lynch and Sonya Deville, Money in the Bank qualifier. Graves brings up the stat that 100% of the women to win Money in the Bank have cashed in successfully. That's a hell of a conversion rate.
Oh yeah.
Like you win the briefcase, you automatically get to pick your belt. You don't even have to go through the process of it all. Trish Stratus comes out with Zoe Stark and they're just watching for the whole match. They're going at a pretty decent pace here. Chelsea Green gets involved, attacking Becky behind the ref's back. But then Becky knocks out Green and runs her into the barricade multiple times, does the same to Deville. The manhandle slam is avoided. She goes for the disarmer. That is blocked. And then Green tries to help Deville with using her foot on the rope, gets caught, and then Deville comes off the second turnbuckle and plants her feet into the manhandle slam, and Becky wins in 11 minutes and 21 seconds to qualify for London.
Yeah, I was almost surprised at how cold this match was early on, considering it was Becky and considering it was for a stipulation. Then I saw the other matches on the show and I realized, oh, okay, it's Hartford. This was not a good crowd for tonight's wrestling. And there were some pretty good matches that I felt like deserved far better reactions than what they got. I don't necessarily feel like this match was one of those, because the work itself I found a bit soft and loose for a modern standard, especially for, you know, what we've become used to, even with Becky matches. But, you know, did a decent job here of, like, you know, Sonya and Chelsea doing all the cheating outside, escalating the odds for, I guess, you know, Becky to try to overcome. And she got a hard-fought victory en route to Money in the Bank.
They put over the closing segment of SmackDown that it got like 40 million views online across, I guess, all their platforms. So it's the most watched 40 million.
Come on. Doesn't Rhea Ripley have like 2 billion followers on TikTok? Weren't they celebrating last
week? Yeah, I mean, how many of those billions didn't watch this segment? They only had 40 million. Saxton interviews Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, and they kind of gloat about the bloodline falling apart, but they note that Zayn states Jimmy did what he needed to do, but not sure about Jay. So Imperium gets involved. Owens freaks out, and he just storms to the ring. He wants a fight with Gunther. So Gunther follows him, and the match is made. But before the match, we get a vignette for Katana Chance and Caden Carter. We see about Carter's basketball background, Chance being a Division I gymnast and being on American Ninja Warrior, and the two being the longest reigning NXT Women's Tag Champions. And this had to air in this portion because we had to get them over very quick tonight for a match.
They did air something, I believe, last week, you know, or one of the weeks since the draft. But today, I mean, I thought this served as like a nice little sort of addition to their real debut tonight.
Gunther and Kevin Owens. So I guess this is a non-title match. Matter because I thought this match was just excellent.
I thought this was almost a pay-per-view caliber. Like,
this was a pay-per-view level match.
And I think it could have even benefited a little from a bit of a longer build. Not even just for the quality, like, you know, for the
this got a commercial break.
I feel the show could have benefited from, let's say, a week's long build, you know, towards, hey, next week you're going to get Gunther versus Kevin Owens. I mean, I that would have, in my opinion, drew a bit of attention to next week's Raw, but sure, why not give it to us after the commercial break?
You know, they are so obviously in a big kick of establishing their champions as these dominant title runs, and I think like there are certainly, I mean, Friday we got the example of investing in that over a long-term period of what you can grow. I do think, on the other hand, when you don't have a ton of challengers set up, like last week with Seth Rollins, this week here you had this match, and even later I thought with like Caden Carter and Katana Chance, it was I think in at least one of these situations you could have had the non-champion win to set something up bigger for down the road, and I just feel they don't want to beat any of their champions, and I think like you could relax that a little bit.
I suppose so, but how much do you relax that? Because I think in the past we've seen the opposite.
I know you don't go to the extreme of where it used to be a joke and you'd always beat them, but
like Austin Theory or like anybody who holds Money in the Bank, you know, jobs for eternity until they win the title.
The point being, like, could you see a Gunther Kevin Owens rematch? And would you want to see a rematch? And who does Gunther have if not for Kevin Owens? So
I do think like there's enough interest that Gunther could beat Kevin Owens here and you could still do enough to justify a rematch, because Gunther is almost this sort of like completely unbeatable obstacle. All you really need is like a great Kevin Owens promo, something about him, you know, doing something differently this time to spark your interest. I don't think he necessarily needs to beat Gunther to set up a rematch.
Well, this match, man, they are just chopping one another, and Gunther is just kicking away at him like with this lazy, disrespectful kick. So Owens comes back with these super kicks and a cannonball. The crowd is getting behind Owens, and this was a tough crowd tonight, but they got this audience. Owens lands this fisherman buster, and man, this crowd, they bought into the idea, man, Gunther is going to lose. And they have certainly reached that level now where when Gunther finally gets beat, it's going to mean a lot, because this audience sees him as unbeatable. And that's the other side of the coin that you argue that, you know, when you never see someone beat, it will mean something in the end. There's a splash, but Owens gets his knees up. Swan dive connects for Owens, and crowd totally buys this as the ending. Gunther kicks out, and then Vinci gets involved, so Zayn yanks him off. Kaiser and Owens go to the floor. There's a stunner to Kaiser, but with Owens' back turned, Gunther rolls him up, just a simple schoolboy, and pins him in 17 minutes and 15 seconds. So it definitely keeps you with the option to go back to this. But this match was outstanding. This was just a great, great match. One of the better Raw matches I can recall.
Yeah, really, really strong match. Only dampened by, I think, the crowd here. Like, in any other building, like, God, imagine if San Juan got a match like this. Imagine if, like, man, Montreal got a match like this. You know, like, this would have been far better received. But something tells me that they're going to meet again, maybe on a bigger stage. I thought there was a lot done to maybe even set up a Gunther-Sammy match coming out of this as well, because you had Sammy basically sell fear the entire time watching ringside, and you almost had Gunther stare him down, you know, throughout the all of his attacks on Kevin Owens. Everything looked great. Great build to Owens near falls. And, you know, any iteration of these guys, Gunther with any of them, is going to be a strong match.
Matt Riddle was with Kathy Kelly, and they're trying to give him more. They're definitely trying to tone down or even outright eliminate the comedy with Riddle. He just gets sick of Gunther cheating, and Kaiser appears calling him a disgrace. And what are you going to do about it? So Riddle attacks both Vinci and Kaiser and puts Kaiser into an ankle lock that they seem to be giving him now. So it was him taking out both guys, and like no jokes, none of the like the stoner vibe. It seemed to be as like a much more serious presentation for Riddle.
Mm-hmm. It was good. Positive. Yeah.
Saxton interviews Rousey and Baszler. They manifested winning these tag titles over a decade ago when they were still competing in the Octagon. You think Rousey in 2013 was like manifesting this, these non-existent tag titles that had not been created?
I forget that they weren't created yet. Well, maybe they had their sights set on, they manifested everything, you know? Yes.
Yeah, so she was getting ready to go on Tough with Misha Tate. Rousey says they're going to legitimize these titles. They won't be an afterthought, really, you know, putting them on in high regard. And they challenge any team with the figurative balls to face them.
That's what she said. I replayed this thing like a million times, okay? We invite any team with, I thought she said figurative falls. She said figurative balls. Yes. Okay.
She had to emphasize that these women have figurative balls, not literal.
Which I doesn't it coincide with her line from last week when she tried to wicked these nuts. So her promos are all basically like ball laden, like the Miz, I guess.
Yeah. It sounds like someone who sat down and watched Jackass and saw it as a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
Carter and Chance walk in. They are the life of the party, and they want a chance at the belt. So Rousey calls this stupid. Baszler says it's ignorance, and it's also bravery, and threatens to rip their tendons off, and they're going to go speak to Pierce, and then they just walk right out to the ring. I don't know. Maybe they texted Adam Pierce on their way to the ring.
Maybe so, Pierce is next to in Gorilla. He's just like, hey, we want to
make yeah. Right. Take as much time as you need.
Yeah. Like we, you know, like they must have a pretty empty rundown, like in kayfabe, right?
Did you hear this line? Kevin Patrick described Chance and Carter as having a telepathic relationship.
Did not necessarily catch that, but
yeah,
who's to doubt?
Like maybe they finish each other's thoughts and communicate that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this was not like the smoothest match, but I thought that Carter and Chance, like this audience was getting into them.
I thought this match was awesome.
Like, I thought
it was great.
I thought that they did a really great job with Chance and Carter of like establishing them to the point that I was watching this and be like, what is the harm in them getting this? Did they establish this? This was a title match.
This was the non-title match.
No. Oh, it was a non-title. Yeah. Then like, honestly, like if one of them had just,
you wanted them to win the championship here. Or you wanted them to at least get the win.
Yeah. I thought you said this is non-title.
This is non-title. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, they could have got the win here. It's not harming.
I think it's too early to beat Shayna and Ronda. They haven't even had a proper defense.
There's nobody for the, like, there's no one.
So again, I think Shayna and Ronda are very much similar types of characters as Gunther, where like they should be so unbeatable that you can build to a rematch without beating them. All like the odds were so, like, if this was, there were Vegas odds for this, I mean, Shayna and Ronda would probably be like, you know, minus 10,000. And for that reason, like, simply looking good against them is enough.
I don't know if it will be enough. We will see in the follow-up to this.
Well, they're not going to get a rematch right away, but this was meant to be an establisher.
So who's the team? Who's the big team for Rousey and Baszler now?
Who have they been building up to?
No one.
Okay, but I wouldn't necessarily say them beating Ronda and Shayna would immediately
make them. You've just created a team. You have automatically created these two.
But then
a rematch, the title match.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to beat Ronda and Shayna this soon after they just won the championship.
I think it does no harm at all. But sometimes you need to create challengers, and it's like not everyone needs to be the just like
you're in the like you need to establish Shayna and Ronda themselves.
I think you need a team that like at least there's some believability.
I would say in the future, but moment, I don't.
This team is above everyone, and I don't think
that alone is a good enough excuse to beat your champions.
You're trying to create a division. You're trying to create,
but
a
not in the
bigger match.
Like what? Like how long have they won the championships?
This
is like their first match as champions,
and this is their first match on Raw in Chance and Carter.
But I'm saying I think it's more important to establish the champions first.
I mean, they've got the belts. I think everyone takes them as like a serious team.
No. Look at everybody who's held these belts. These are like the most worthless belt in the company.
Well, I think you could have created something here with Chance and Carter. They had Rousey tagged in. She goes for Piper's Pit. And then Chance tags herself in and Ronda's shoulder sent into the post. There's the after party on Rousey. And this was where Chance gets a big near fall. Baszler saves. This woke up the audience. And then Rousey gets the ankle lock. Chance rolls out into a code breaker. And then Baszler is in, lands the knee, and the Kirifuda clutch submits Carter in 6 minutes and 42 seconds.
I thought the match was really, really strong. You know, and again, I really wish this took place anywhere but Hartford. I'm sorry, Hartford.
Man,
this,
you hated Hartford.
This was like a crowd that like unfortunately like really diminished, I think, the effects of some of the hard work from the wrestling. And I don't even usually say that about a lot of like towns that don't give great reactions. But I thought that was the case here because I thought Chance and Carter did really well. You know, these two have been in the system for a long time and they were put into a big spot here on TV. First match with Ronda Rousey, and I thought they killed it. You know, I love the way the match was framed where you had sort of like the giants of the division in Ronda and Shayna kind of underestimating the two for their size. And then the two of them just completely dazzled, in my opinion, with like their acrobatic, like lucha inspired offense. I thought they looked great, both with their double team timing and also individually with their own offense. I thought Shayna and Ronda were great as well. You know, their legitimacy, I think, really shines in this sort of tag team setting, especially in these sort of short bursts where it's just like offense, offense, offense. Two of them like sort of like sharing arm duties, working over Carter's arm. It was really good and actually gave me like new hope for the division.
I think that you've got a great babyface tag team in Chance and Carter, and this is a division that desperately needs a great babyface tag team to break through. So Bronson Reed runs into Ricochet, calling him lucky last week, and that the last time I ragdolled you, and yet you're in Money in the Bank and I'm not. So Ricochet explains how winning and losing works, and I won last week and you lost. Reed says, yeah, but I dominated Nakamura. And Nakamura walks in and says, yeah, but then I beat you. Reed says it'll be different next time. And then Ricochet congratulates Nakamura on winning last week, but I'm going to give you an L. This was a conversation that if I was a part of, I probably would have rammed my head into a wall being a part of. This sounded like the most uninspired three people having a conversation that they would never have.
This is what happens when you have actors that aren't really actors.
Some great depth here. A promo aired for Johnny Gargano, the ultimate underdog, a kid from Cleveland with a dream who traveled the world living that dream and then was told there was no place for him here and yet came back and became the face of that brand in reference to NXT. Now he is a staple of Raw. I don't know if he is a staple of Raw. He's part of Raw. I don't know if he's a staple of Raw.
Yeah, he's on maybe like, you know, like 20% of the time.
They underestimate me, but I work tirelessly and the Johnny Gargano story is just getting started.
Good video package overall, you know, nice reintroduction. I thought the video packages like this week actually as of late have been good. And I wonder if there's any sort of change that's facilitated that.
Ricochet and Shin Ricochet hit the Fosbury flop. They went through the commercial break. And then after Ricochet hit the recoil, it stopped the Kinshasa. And then they fight on the turnbuckle when Ricochet starts pointing. And there's Bronson Reed, who's just made his way out here. He attacks them both, 8:09, and lays out both guys, including a tsunami to Ricochet. Nothing.
I mean, you know, this in itself, I thought was like on paper, a really strong match. First time meeting between a singles meeting, I should say, between Shinsuke Nakamura and Ricochet. Like in a New Japan setting, this could have been amazing. But on Raw, I mean, really was just a match, really just kind of like a backdrop for Bronson Reed to come in and collectively to remind you about the money in the bank that's about to happen with all three of these.
Could you see Reed? I guess we've had this conversation. If they have it almost feels like they're trying to get Reed back into this match. Maybe he could challenge one of these guys for their spot.
Wait, isn't Reed's not in it? You're right.
No, Reed lost to Nakamura.
So I feel like they might do like a last chance thing. Or maybe this is just,
he could beat Nakamura to get in there. Like Reed makes a lot more sense in that match to me than Nakamura.
Well, he wouldn't beat Nakamura. Like I meant a last chance thing with all the losers.
Yeah. And then you get like a seventh guy in there. Cause they've got the qualifiers announced. So anyway, Otis is with Gable and Maxine. I don't know what's going on here. They're going to teach Maxine how to wrestle, essentially, because she ran away from Valhalla, and alphas don't do that. So they are training her for the Viking lady, and Otis is reading Viking literature.
Yeah. I don't think this is nearly as interesting now that Maxine is like fully on board with like, you know, this Alpha Academy. I thought it was far more interesting when she was trying to take Otis away. I think it would have been the most interesting if Otis ended up joining the Maximo Male Models. But now it's just like Maxine as part of the Alpha Academy. And I just don't really see the tension. I don't see the interest. But
you're also not even doing something where Otis seems all that interested in Maxine. Because if you had been doing this, like Otis like has this crush on her, it does open the door for like that's Gable's turn. It's like him and Maxine end up getting together. And that's the pairing coming out of this.
Gable and Maxine? Yeah, yes. Maybe.
You sound riveted.
I just don't. Yeah, it's
well, where else is this going? Are we just going to do this forever? The shoosh? Sure. I guess. Miz TV, he brings out Cody Rhodes and notes, "You look dashing tonight," and asks, "Are you stupid challenging Brock Lesnar again?" And Cody refers to him as Mike, and Miz corrects him, and they lead a chant of Mike. States that Lesnar is on his annual hibernation. We're not going to see him for some time. So Miz has a surprise guest. It's Dominic and Rhea. And Dominic gets heavily booed, but not Don Callis level. This was Hartford, of all places. And Ripley refers to him as her Latino heat. And he calls Cody a little birdie with a broken wing. But he's realized Cody is a bad father. You should be at home with your baby girl, but you're a deadbeat dad, just like Ray. And Cody mocks his jail stint of 15 minutes and says, "Your prison tattoo is even worse than my prison tattoo."
Yeah, nice. Self-deprecating humor. That's good.
People were decoding this. Was he referring to his prison stay as his last occupation or his last company he was part of?
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't think he meant it that way either. Please. But nonetheless, that's what he said.
You're looking too deep.
Oh, dude, what do you think this audience
why
is?
Would like he said nothing but great things about his time in AEW. He uses it in his WWE promos.
I mean, like, he did say here, like, my time in prison. Like, he did.
Yeah, but why, like, what would lead somebody to? Sure, but what would lead somebody to think? I mean, he's joking because it's on his neck. It looks like something that somebody would get in prison.
That's how I took it. Yeah. And he says, "Listen, I know Ray isn't perfect. He's made mistakes. In fact, I'm looking at one of them," which was a good line. Dominic goes to leave, but then he sneaks up from behind and he slaps Cody. He doesn't punch him. He slaps him and then runs behind Rhea. Dude, Dominic was awesome here. And he leaves calling Cody a deadbeat. And then the Miz is laughing. So Cody knocks him out with the cast. So they let Cody get in the last strike. I left this segment thinking, listen, we saw the Observer report, and that if you believe that Cody and Lesnar is earmarked for SummerSlam and you've got to get through Money in the Bank and keep this guy away from the title, this is not the worst option for London. I think it's a red hot crowd that will love Cody and detest Dominic. I think for a month, this is a great detour for Cody. And then Brock comes back and you go to SummerSlam in August.
I think it's a fantastic choice for the both of them. You know, you have somebody like a Dominic Mysterio, who's a really rare type of heel that can guarantee a negative reaction just by simply appearing. And it would be fine to, like, you know, continue to use them on TV for these sort of like undercard things, but why not use it in a main event program with the biggest star in the company? And I think it's great. I think as a 1 month long feud, it's absolutely perfect. You know, the two of them have this sort of second generation tie in that definitely makes sense. And but beyond that, they're two of the hottest characters in the entire company. So I thought Cody had some pretty strong lines here. I like it. I like it a lot.
Will the UK audience forgive Cody though for his big program that he had a few years ago against the boxer? Remember?
But yeah, Anthony
Agogo. Money here in the US.
Yeah,
Anthony Agogo.
I don't think so. I think he'd be cheered pretty well. Does Brandy make an appearance to be in Cody's corner
with his daughter? He brings his daughter to London because he's a great father.
I don't know, but I just meant to, you know, oppose Rhea.
Yeah, you could have backup for Cody. So it's a reason to introduce Brandy potentially. So anyway, I like this idea. It's a solid idea for Money in the Bank. Zoe Stark against Natalya in our next qualifying match. Trish Stratus is in the corner. This match, not good. There was a leapfrog out of the corner and Natalya tweaks her knee and then Trish points it out. After Stark hits a super kick and Natalya gets the sharpshooter, Zoe fights to the rope. Dude, there were crickets reacting to this match. Stark goes to the floor and Natalya kicks her coming out. And then it's Trish with the cheap shot to the knee that the ref misses. And then Stark hits the Z360. And when I say hit, I mean attempted to, because this did not land well. And Stark gets the win in 351, but a dead crowd. And I did not think this was a very inspiring match either.
I thought technically, like, they looked fine together. If in fact, even good. I think they're two of the stronger technical wrestlers in the company, but
the finish is tough. Like, people are going to have difficulties taking that thing.
Z360.
It's just the timing is like, you have to have the timing really well. Like, we've even seen it with like the GTH sometimes.
But in terms of like crowd response, these two never stood a chance. It was silent in the third hour. You know, you're talking about like Natalya, who's sort of like a perennial undercard wrestler at this point, and Zoe Stark, who's a brand new project. So I would not say this was like, you could not hold this against Zoe Stark in any way. She's too new to be able to survive Hartford.
Yeah, in this crowd, I mean, they knew Indus Shear was coming up. They were excited, so they just wanted to get moving. Paul Heyman invites everyone to SmackDown. This is where Jey Uso will make his historic choice, but it's not going to be good news. It will rip the family dynasty apart because Jey will choose his brother, Solo. And you can share a womb with your twin brother, but you will never be closer than you are with the tribal chief. Jey Uso will acknowledge that fact this Friday or else. So that is the big hook for SmackDown, and we will see what carryover they can get after that gigantic audience last Friday. Indus Shear against Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. I was actually surprised they showed this graphic going to break for free. Like, usually this would have been like Indus Shear in action next, yeah. But the match doesn't even take place. Shelton Benjamin just vanished after he was tossed out of the ring. He just took off. He's like, I'm done with this. And Cedric takes their finisher twice and had to choke and cough forever as these two just prayed for a longer segment next time.
Jeez, like, I really don't know like why they would do things like this. My only explanation is that maybe this was supposed to go a bit longer and they had to cut this for time, and so they decided to just do like a little non-match instead. But
yeah, because we didn't have enough time for Seth and Damian here at the end that went forever.
Well, like, I mean, Indus Shear are known for doing these squash matches anyway, so if you had enough time to do this beatdown, why not just ring the bell and get the damn squash over with?
Instead, that would be the match next week.
Oh, fuck.
This is a storytelling way.
Who could be interested in
can't
in
give
this
away the ending now?
I mean, this is worse. Like, look at, like, they beat the shit out of these two. How would anybody be interested in a rematch? Beyond that, I don't know what the insistence is on these guys posing so damn much. Like, every time they hit a big move, they put their hands together. They got to do this.
They've got to, like, thank, you know, for this power that they've been graced with.
Oh, and they have to do that in front of the hard camera? Always. Like, robots?
This is how you do it at church. You always look at the hard cam.
The whole thing just makes them look so silly. It makes them look stupid, okay? If you're in this year, you came all this way. You got dressed up in your robes, okay? You got oiled up, whatever you have to do. You got warmed up in the back. What, just to come out here and get yourself, like, a non-payday? A non-win bonus by having the match not start? How is this smart for the business?
Yeah, and then the ref waved it off. I was like, what are you waving off? There's no match.
Exactly. They lost out.
Yeah. Didn't think too deeply about this. Jinder Mahal is a poor manager, obviously. And then the last like 23 minutes of the broadcast are Seth Rollins and Damian Priest. And this thing went 22 minutes. I did not feel it needed to go 22 minutes. It felt like we had our hot 5 minute ending, but this was a lot of just, I don't know whether it was the crowd or just, the whole presentation. I thought that this dragged a lot for me for like the first like half of the match. We go through various commercial breaks. Rollins ascends to the top to hit the superplex, then powers through for the Falcon Arrow and hits a three suicide dives. And then the frog splash for a two count. Priest comes back. He hits the blunt force trauma of LA Knights. And this is just called a headlock driver by Corey Graves. And then Priest hits a Rana off the top to Seth Rollins, and it's Rollins countering with the pedigree, but it's a delayed cover, only getting a two count. Rollins then clips the knee and lifts up Damian Priest and power bombs him into the barricade. And the way Damian Priest came down, man, this looked like a rough landing for him. And he's selling the shoulder. Balor shows up and he gets super kicked. And into the ring goes Rollins, and he takes the South of Heaven, and Priest is looking at Balor, saying, why are you here? And he goes for the razor's edge, the shoulder gives out, and he gets hit with the rolling elbow and a stomp. Seth retains in 21:55 and has the stare down with Finn Balor, which I don't know if you have anyone else ready for Seth Rollins, so if this ends up being Money in the Bank, I could see it happening.
Because it's the UK, I could see it too. I think it makes sense for Balor. But man, if that was the intent, I think they sure did a man rough job of like booking him tonight. Up. He felt like such an afterthought here, you know, not just in the opening segment getting sort of dunked on by both like by Rollins, but with Priest setting Rollins up. I also think in the run-in, in the interference, it just kind of came in, got knocked out like a real chump. So we'll see. It definitely feels more like a TV title defense, but Money in the Bank, you know, does sort of make sense as well for Balor. I mean, I watched this match with like by zipping through the commercial, so hopefully like that probably took a bit of the drag out of me. I thought it was a strong match. In fact, like this is why you created the belt, right? You know, so that you can add a bit of luster to these like Seth Rollins TV matches, which for a long time have really been the most dependable part of the show. Now, you know, you're just kind of putting some branding on it and making it for something. I like the fact that they, you know, called back to the Falcon Arrow spot last week where Priest was able to counter it. This week, Rollins was able to re-counter it. Also, the Finn buckle bomb spot, of course, that which led to the shoulder injury to prevent Priest from winning. But the biggest story might be the Priest and Balor descent that they've been teasing.
Yeah, and maybe that gives a little insight over last week's ending of not wanting to beat Balor if they do have him plugged in for Money in the Bank. But to that, I would argue, to me, the fall guy could have been AJ for Priest to beat AJ. And that sets up your match next week. If you don't want to beat Rollins and you don't want to beat Balor and you don't want to beat Damian Priest, to me, AJ was the most expendable. But I mean, ultimately, did they really get penalized for Seth beating Priest other than it was silly for him to challenge for the title the next week?
Yeah, I guess they just, unless the announcers make a point to like emphasize it, I get the sense they are expecting their audience not to remember match results from like the week prior.
So what you're saying is they could have beat Rousey and Baszler tonight and been fine.
They could, sure, they could do anything. Fine. Yeah. Hey, another thing is, a lot of photos coming out afterwards with Priest shaking Rollins' hand. So clearly like teasing some Damian Priest babyface turn coming out of all this as well.
If I have one request for these title matches, especially if they're a regular occurrence on television, I wish Kevin Patrick would identify it as the working man's title like 10 more times than he already does. I think that could be utilized way more than the 50 that he already.
Shouldn't it just be like, you know, this like construction tool belt instead then?
That, you know what we should find out? How many social media views does this clip get next week or over the next week? Is it going to hit 4 million? Yeah.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Reigns should be, he should come out and say, yeah, you can be the working man's champion. I'm the drawing champion.
Yeah.
So there was some very good wrestling on this show. It was not a great crowd in Hartford, to say the least. But, man, that Kevin Owens and Gunther match, go out of your way to watch that. I thought it was one of the better WWE TV matches in some time. Very good.
I thought it was a strong debut for Chance and Carter. Money in the Bank. Did they – no qualifiers. Oh, wait,
we had the two qualifiers. Right. Zoe Stark is in and Becky Lynch is in. So, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Like, they, instead of having a singles match between those two, incorporate that story into the ladder match. And frankly, these Money in the Bank matches, they need some star power. So having Becky and Zoe in the women's match, it helps that match.
Yeah, agree.
Okay, we will go over to Super Chats, questions, feedback, wherever you would like to go. We do have some feedback here from the forum.
Hey, if you watch live every single Monday, Wednesday, if you're a cafe patron every Friday at youtube.com/postwrestling, you can join us live, get the reviews right after the show airs. And if you happen to be around, you have the ability to jump the line with our feedback section by sending us a super chat. And we want to thank those of you who did that today, because they include Teach Them to Dougie, who sends a $2 super chat. Thank you, Dougie. He says, Collision main event to be announced Wednesday. Predictions.
I said it before. I would certainly lean towards MJF defending the title on that first Collision. But, I mean, like, you look at this roster, there are many, many options of where you could go with that. But I would do something big. Like, it tells you, number one, there is this belief that, you know, with MJF that – no, he never, ever does Rampage. And it's like right off the bat, it tells you like this is a big deal. Not only are you getting a title match, it's an MJF title match on the non-Dynamite show. That's where I would go. But there's many good directions to go for that first one. You want something big. And I feel like MJF is something big without doing something.
Well, that's something big. Does that something big need to involve CM Punk in a wrestling match?
Not on show number one. No, I think Punk just being there, speaking for the first time, that's the draw for that first one. You're just watering it down by not watering it down, but that could be another time. Like, his first match should be, in all honesty, they should hold off on that for as long as they can.
So what's the update on ticket sales? And curious to know, like, what you think, like, their aims would be at this point.
Chicago's at 8,000. Like, it's a good number for.
Is it good for the United Center?
I mean, it can be higher, obviously. They've put in more people in the United Center, but 8,000 is not an embarrassment for the United Center. And I still think they will move more tickets. They moved 1,000 tickets this week with Punk, and I think they will hope that they will get some kind of bump this week with this match announcement, and hopefully that final couple of days, once Collision is taking form, that they can move some more tickets as well.
Well, I guess in my mind, I'm just thinking, what is the type of match that would draw like a decent addition, you know, to that number for United Center in Chicago? I just wonder if there's any pressure on their end to want to consider putting Punk in a wrestling match. I would agree that I think the best move would be to delay it until either pay-per-view or even like All In. Well, that might be too far, but search somewhere further down the line. But I could at least see the thinking and the temptation. Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, it's the follow-up Collisions that very much need something. Like, again, United Center, it's a very respectable number. Like, no one's going to call that a failure. But at this point, like, Toronto and Hamilton, like, those are very bad numbers that they are at. Like, Hamilton is still under 800 people. Toronto is under 1,500.
I'm curious to know if there's any New Japan involvement, you know, with the go-home show before, well, a week, I should say, before Forbidden Door. It's hard to predict the main event, you know, really to kind of take your pick. There's really so much. But is it all hands on deck, or are we starting with the soft split, you think?
For that first show, I would want as many of your big stars as possible, but that would mean the Elite. And I don't know if you're going to have them on that first show.
God, that would be silly. Really? Like, there's more than one like change room in the back, you know?
I mean, like, wait, that's like the whole... That's one of the main functions of this show, is like this idea that it's got to be separate.
I'm willing to bet the Elite have to be on. But you know what? Who knows? You're right. All right, we'll find out tomorrow. Thank you, Dougie. He also sends $5 to say, if you guys could book Money in the Bank, contestants finish and cash in with the current WWE roster, how would each of you book it? That's maybe too big of a question for us to answer here. Nor do we have the time to really kind of like map out a Money in the Bank match from scratch. But okay, if you could pick somebody from the roster to give the Money in the Bank to right now, let's say the men's, who would you pick?
On the men's side, I mean, so who's qualified so far? We have Ricochet, Nakamura, and
LA Knight.
And LA Knight. I could certainly see Knight winning. You know, he's someone that for that night will get a very big reaction. And now that you've introduced the non-Roman Reigns champion, there's more of a believability. Like LA Knight, if this were a year ago, like that's what Austin Theory had to run into. There was no believability of this person cashing in, and thus he did it on the U.S. champion.
Right. So you're saying LA Knight would go for Seth Rollins' championship, and that would be a bit believable?
I would think so, unless you just want to have this guy get like run over by Roman Reigns, which, like, what's the value there?
I suppose in my head, I'm trying to think like who else would even be in the match at this point. I think Gargano has a really good chance of at least being in the match.
Honestly, like LA Knight, as much as I think he has going for him, like the age does work against him. Like this is someone that, you know, you don't have 10 years in. And that's why I look at Grayson Waller as a better alternative of someone that is going to be hopefully around for a decade plus, and he is someone that could win this briefcase and really establish himself for months before you're even getting to the cash-in stage. And this could really establish himself with a key storyline tool.
Who's in the qualifying matches on Friday?
Not Grayson Waller. So he's sort of out of it, but he was one when we were first like looking at these matches, he was someone that
we got out at me. Butch and Corbin, and then Santos versus Ali. So Santos Escobar,
I think Santos will be in that one.
And I think Butch as well. Although Corbin, you can, you know, you like
for London, I think you want Butch.
True.
In that
right.
one. Corbin does not need to be in the match.
Are either of them options to win?
You'll have a hotter crowd than usual for a Butch, but no, I really don't see him winning. Like this lineup, it is like a Ricochet or a LA Knight. Like it's really, they can honestly put it on anyone. No one to me screams like this is the person that it is like this this long term play that could be a real great elevation.
Yeah,
they badly need a Yoda Tsuji. They need somebody that is seen as like this future can't miss star that's hasn't quite made it yet, but everyone it sees as being that breakout star.
I don't love like babyface, you know, Money in the Bank wins, but I do think like Johnny Gargano is somebody who kind of needs that extra push, you know, especially if like they think his ceiling might be further than just, you know, where it's at. The fact that he got a video introduction tells me that they do have big plans for him. I think he'd be a good choice. I think if Bronson Reed somehow makes it in, I think he'd be a good choice as well.
Is there a logic gap that they have not explained why Cody is not in a qualifier? Do you feel they need to explain that? Should they explain that?
Yeah, I think that would.
You can't tell me coming off a loss to Brock has disqualified him in the tournament that has Baron Corbin.
Well, where's he? Why doesn't he want to finish the story?
Well, that's the whole point here is that he is not ever addressed Money in the Bank.
So he did lose, okay, to Brock. Okay.
A lot of people have lost that are
true. Yeah.
When was the last time Baron Corbin won?
Well, the explanation should be like he's so like caught up with Brock right now. He wants to end Brock before he could focus on the championship. But I mean,
but that has not been said.
Last
year when he had the torn pec, he said he still wanted to go to Money in the Bank. And then Seth attacks him on Raw to take him out of that. This guy was going to go in with one arm last year.
No, I think it should be mentioned. Thank you, Teachem to Dougie. He also sends another $5 super chat. Thank you so much for the support, Teachem to Dougie. Do you know how to Dougie?
No, I don't.
Do you need to be taught?
I don't, no.
Okay. Rob McDonald also sends a super chat. He asks, or says, Omega and Page versus Mox and Danielson for the first collision. Is that a big enough match for a first collision?
That's a fairly big match.
billing like an Omega Page reunion tag team match, yeah, I think it's decent.
Is Omega and Takeshita out of the realm of possibility?
That's strong too. Again, like I'm trying to like these sort of announcements, I think the aim will always be to try to like motivate ticket sales, especially for a show like this. And are either of those matches the type of matches that would motivate ticket sales to a considerable degree?
Yeah. And as well, like a big audience as well. Like that is right. Ultimately what this is going to be judged on that first week. Yeah, you could go with the tag. I think they really want to put something out that's going to have that wow factor to it. And mm-hmm. and the question becomes like, how big do you go at that point? Like you do have this story of Kenny Omega just going to Japan. Like that kind of has to need have a follow-up.
How about Omega and Okada teaming up, or maybe even a Golden Lovers reunion? I mean, I think all that's on the table right now, you know, with this.
Like you do have to explain this trip to Japan mm-hmm. and where he went or yeah. and what the purpose of it was, because he wasn't at Dominion, and certainly that would seem like story. But again, that brings into question like the, you know, the whole Elite that, side.
We have a few more weeks of announcements left, so maybe Kenny Omega will make a major announcement. We'll be the 2 weeks from now. Rob McDonald also sends another super chat to ask, what are the chances Gunther enters and wins Money in the Bank?
I would say pretty small. He seems to be tied with Owens and Zayn for this pay-per-view cycle. So I could see Gunther and Zayn maybe at Money in the Bank, or
I think we also figured out like Gunther like is en route to be, like matching or at least beating like a Honky Tonk's reign like what come Survivor Series or something like that. Well, right?
I promise you they're going to be doing championship celebrations after last Friday these big numbers.
So I wouldn't expect Gunther to leave like the IC title until that happens. So yeah, I don't think he needs it either. Okay, thank you so much, Rob McDonald. Let's go lastly to Jake, who sends us a $5 super chat. Thank you, Jake. He says, you guys are right to not do the Collision review. Even for fans, it's just way too much out there. Sorry, but more isn't always a great thing. Well, certainly more of the two of us is not always a great thing, because I think, you know, we have a lot of great voices on our roster and a lot of people that I'm wanting to, you know, showcase to our audience a whole lot more, especially people that watch the stuff even closer than certainly I do. I don't know about John, but we have a lot of very capable people here, and I'm very excited to actually announce who will be hosting this new Collision review.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for the super chats. Muggin chimes in, putting aside the fact that he's got pinned in a tag match last week, Damian Priest came through with another consistent effort against Rollins for the world title. Sure, the lack of suspense over the outcome didn't help, but Priest taking issue with Finn Balor appearing does. Was an interesting development. I bet the direction is Rollins and Balor in London. Gunther against Owens was an awesome pay-per-view level match, and it was for free. They bodied it, and the finish leaves the door open for a rematch when the time is right. Chance and Carter had a strong showcase, and the two Money in the Bank qualifiers pushed the Trish Becky story forward. Strong episode all around. Does Brock work London or not? I think not. I don't think Brock is not.
He's in hibernation, as Cody said.
He's in hibernation, which is the first year. Yeah, that's
he's not making that flight. Are you kidding me?
He's not going over unless it's Saudi Arabia, I guess. Yeah. That's the flight for him each year. No, I think Brock probably misses that show and then is in Detroit for August.
Yeah, Detroit's close to Saskatchewan, isn't it?
It's close enough, sure. Hmm. Let us wrap up on that note. Tuesday night. Up next, we'll be live at 10:15 Eastern with Braden Harrington and Davey Portman. And Tuesday night has the number one contenders battle royal for a future shot at the NXT women's title. Mustafa Ali takes on Joe Gacy, the Creeds and Ivy Nile against the Dyad and Ava in action. Eddie Thorpe against Damon Kemp, and Blair Davenport taking on Danny Palmer. So that will be Blair Davenport's first match since September, as she just returned. So that is coming up on Tuesday night. And for Dynamite, so far, we've got Orange Cassidy and Swerve Strickland. Will there be a title change?
I'm going to say yes.
Ricky Starks against Jay White. A Texas Tornado match with Jack Perry and Hook against Preston Vance and Dralistico. MJF will speak, and so will Tony Khan with his announcement of the Collision main event. So that is coming up over the next two nights. So again, Wednesday night, we'll be live at 10.05 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite. And then as soon as we're done that, we hop on over to the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we will be chatting Dark Side of the Ring with Shattered, the Magnum TA story. So look out for that. And that is it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Go on over postwrestlingcafe.com, or you can subscribe at video.postwrestling.com and get in on all of the bonus fun. That is it for Rewind to Raw.